Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. I welcome people from all over the world, from all the stations that are syndicating this program, and people in Mongolia, Tibet. We have people listening everywhere. And that's why I try to select the topics each day that could impact as many people as possible. For example, everyone wants to live a longer and healthier life. So today I'm going to talk about some nutrients that have been proven to extend the lifespan. Then I'm going to talk about how we can increase our vitamin D levels, and that can improve our chances of surviving prostate cancer. For those who also have diabetes, there's a big study on ginseng's benefit in helping those individuals. Also today, I'm going to talk about the Mediterranean and why a lot of people thought it would be a great place to retire to, go to. For visiting, I agree. For living there, I disagree. We have to add it to our list of non-sustainable. I'll explain why. Today, I'm going to say we can do even more than that by going to zero waste recycling and how that will impact climate change. So there's a good article in Grassroots Recycling Network by Dr. Bill Sheenan. I'll share that. Also, everyone I'm sure is now aware that there was a failed coup in Turkey. And the American media and our Congress is presenting it as, gee whiz, these terrible people wanted to throw out our good friend, this man who's doing a lot to help protect the Middle East. We have an air base there. Just the opposite is true. This man is a genocidalist. He is pure evil. But we know that. We, meaning the United States government, our Secretary of State, and Hillary Clinton, knows all that. But I'm going to go further. A history lesson today on Turkey, which was the Ottoman Empire. They were one of the worst empires in history. I'm even going to go further today. I'm going to share with you the 10 most evil empires in history, those that used slavery, genocide, biological warfare. They committed all this in the name of empire. Now, I'm doing the research today. I should have it finished later today or tomorrow, where I'll also be able to prove that America could be included in the 10 most evil empires in history. It's just that we don't pull the figures together. But I pulled a lot together. In fact, I pulled how many people have actually died from being in Iraq and in Libya. Let's begin. I'm working with a health support group now, and we've had some remarkable improvements in the short period of time we've been meeting. I'm doing an original new lecture for them this week by identifying my core of the lecture is, who are you? If I wake up in the morning and I don't know who I am at my core value and belief, then everything I'm going to do that day will not be in alignment with my authentic self. That doesn't mean you can't work hard, be diligent, make a great effort, make even a successful career, but still, after all that, when you slow down, when you stop everything, you find this big emptiness. So what do? When we find ourselves empty, we distract that emptiness. We put something in it. Might be watching a meaningless brain-dead show like the Staying Up with the Kardashians, or one of the other game shows, or a cooking show that's become more of a blood sport. None of it constructive. None of it solving any problems. It's just glorifying the inertia of our existence. We would do just as well if every American spent 4 hours a day examining the content in their toilet bowls to see if there's any meaning in it, because watching these loons on television is no more constructive. So that's the core, but I'm also going to talk about anti-aging, especially anti-aging the brain, how to overcome depression, anxiety, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, memory loss, dementia, etc. And two of the things I'm going to talk about, probably spending an hour on that part of the lecture alone. By the way, I'm not saying this to get more people to come. We're filled. I'm just saying for people who are coming, they're learning because they're applying what they're learning. Is there a couple things we can do? Now, I've already given everyone in this audience the basic. Almost everything that bad happens at your cellular level happens because of inflammatory agents. Those inflammatory agents, like cytokines, it's just one of many, create more free radicals. And at work, the math is this. The more free radicals you create, the more those free radicals can hit a cell and damage it. When that cell is damaged, you're not going to be able to repair it either at all, in which case it becomes a cancer cell or a dead cell, or you don't have enough that you're taking in to repair it. So our number one way that we slow down all disease and all aging is we stop pro-inflammatory, like drinking a cola. Coffee, massively pro-inflammatory. Fluoride in the water. So having unfluoridated water is important. Doesn't help you with your teeth in any case. Having no fried foods. The frying itself causes massive amounts of free radicals. Having none of the artificial flavors and coloring agents and dyes and preservatives, which are loaded in almost all of our food today. Having no fructose, processed sugars. Having natural sugars are all right, but none of the fried stuff. Getting away from gluten, which is like a glue inside your intestine, and casein in dairy. And by the way, that's how historically they would make mortar stronger, by putting casein in it. Well, what do you think it does in your intestine? Getting away from eating animal products. I mentioned to a person last night where I was having a juice, and a professor came over, and we were having a conversation. And he said, so why are you against meat? I said, well, let's just take three reasons. Do you care at all about global warming? Yeah. Are you doing anything about it? No. You realize that if we just got rid of the meat, went from 7 days a week of animal proteins, that means eggs and dairy and chicken and fish and beef and pork and veal, if you got rid of that even half a week, you would make an enormous improvement in the global warming because you'd reduce methane gases, which are anywhere from, depending upon the methane gas release, from animals, it could be as high as 50 times more powerful than carbon dioxide. And that would be a big plus. But that would mean you'd have to realign your diet. You would have to take in some other foods. But there are other foods. If you like sausage, there's a vegan sausage. If you like eggs, there's vegan tofu scrambled eggs. You cannot tell the difference. If you like ice cream, there is a non-dairy ice cream. If you like something sweet, there's coconut sugar or maple syrup or stevia. So there's natural alternatives today, over 35,000 products to select from. And then select those that are organic or locally grown or GMO-free. And that was one thing. But secondly, it is the fact that there has never been a study published anywhere in the scientific literature. I know because I just am in the process of final editing on a major film on vegetarianism. Most important one I've ever done. It'll premiere in the fall. I'm actually premiering it on some major stations in August. But I looked at all the scientific literature. I could not find one that showed if you ate bacon or salami, like on a pizza, that your body is healthier, your cells are repaired, that you are less likely to have cancer, that eating steaks are good for your heart or cholesterol or intestinal microbiota. And I said, would you eat a piece of meat that's been lying outside on a table in the summertime at 97 degrees temperature for 3 days? He said, of course not. I said, why not? He said, well, because it'd be loaded with bacteria. It'd kill you. I said, how long do you think it takes a steak or a hamburger to go through your intestine? I don't know. It could easily take up to 3 days, and that's 97 to 98 degrees, and filled with toxic bacteria, because someone's eating meat is also going to be eating sugar and probably drinking alcohol and eating refined carbohydrates, bagels and pretzels and toast. And you have nothing but bad bacteria in your body, which signals a destructive pathology in the body. And finally, respect for all animal. I said there is a video that I posted that's up on the internet that shows a penguin swimming 5,000 miles each year onto a specific beach where the fisherman that saved its life is so it can bond with it. And they spend time just hanging out together. The penguin and the guy saved his life. Now, there are people that would eat penguins and not think they'll eat porpoises. In Japan, that is extremely cultured on one level and scientifically advanced and very disciplined in its studies, they engage in some strongly barbaric and inhumane treatment of women. They're highly misogynist, of corruption. It's endemic in their entire society. A pathological lying, their entire financial system is based upon lies, and how they treat animals. It is not a condemnation of the entire society. That would be unfair and not correct. But call something out when it's bad. You would never eat a dog or a cat. But in South Korea and the Philippines, they do. In many countries, they do. So respect for that animal. I said there was a man who helped some elephants many years ago save their lives. And this man died. The elephants that were saved, that were not nowhere near where this man lived, walked for a long journey, stood in front of his house for 3 days without eating or drinking, and walked back. How did they know where to get? They'd never been there. How did they know that he had died? But they did. Just last week, I posted a video of a male bull elephant, not a tame one, that was shot by poachers in the head, but it didn't kill him. He went to a veterinarian hospital and allowed them to extract the bullet from his head, and he survived. How did he know where to go? How did he not act like most wild bull elephants? You go near them, they're gonna charge you. He didn't. So you see, there are wonderful qualities animals, these sentient beings, have, that if you understand that, then you would never want to see them killed. And there is no such thing as humane death. That is an excuse people make. So anyhow, we had this discussion. So here's your educated professor from Columbia, a nice person, who will do one thing, like have a juice, because he heard juices were good, but nothing else. So to the degree that that juice is helping him, fine, but in the long haul, it's not going to make a big difference. And that's why when we make our changes, we should look at the context in which our changes are being made. Are we really changing everything we need to make a substantial and formative outcome possible? Or are we just doing something as a token? So here are some things. Get rid of the pro-inflammatory. Get rid of the animal proteins. Get rid of the refined carbohydrates. You've done a lot of good if you've done that. Then you have to rebuild with fresh fruits and vegetables, high in chlorophyll and fibers, plant-based amino acids, quinoa. If you say, well, where am I going to get my protein? Well, why don't you ask the longest-lived mammal in the world, the Galapagos turtle? They live hundreds of years. They're vegan. An elephant, vegan. Giraffes, vegan. Long-lived. In fact, longer than any cat or dog. Now, but dogs can be living almost double the lifespan if they're vegan. I know because I've had vegan dogs that have lived in their 20s. So what can we do? So here's our takeaway message. There's a couple things we can do. One is called PQQ. And what PQQ does, it builds new mitochondria, which are the power sources in your body. And as you age, the mitochondria decline, and they lose their ability to sustain function and support life processes. Hence, your muscles are not as strong and resilient. You can't exercise as long. Your brain becomes fatigued after reading or watching something. Your heart becomes fatigued, all because they lack PQQ, mitochondria. So the PPQ actually gives you more mitochondria, builds new ones, and that reverses much of the aging process. It's vital for your heart, vital for your brain, and improves cognition. I would also take PQQ with coenzyme Q10. I'd take 20 milligrams PQQ, and I would take 200 milligrams of ubiquinone or coenzyme Q10. Now, that's one thing, but also NAD. The NAD is a nicotinamide, adenine, a dinucleotide, just simply put, NAD. So when we become fatigued and when we lack motivation, could be due to the age-related decline in the AD levels and changes in healthy cellular metabolism. Now, we find NAD naturally in every cell in the body, and it plays an essential role in regulating genes that control aging. So when you take, let's say, 100 milligrams of NAD, you are promoting sirtuin, which is a gene activation in the aging process. You're enhancing the growth of mitochondria, supporting the energy levels. You are favorably modulating your metabolism, so you should have more energy as you get older, especially postmenopausal and menopausal women. You're contributing to the neuron health in your brain, and you're promoting insulin activity, supporting healthy blood sugar levels. All that is good. So you see, simple things, inexpensive, easy to do. You stop the negative, you begin the positive. Now, an article in Cancer Epidemiology, Biomarkers and Prevention, researchers at the National Cancer Institute documented that the higher the serum vitamin D levels, the greater increase in survival of prostate cancer. And I would also add that there are probably 2,000 articles you could find on vitamin D helping all different parts of the body. But this is an important one, so I would definitely take vitamin D ideally twice a day. You could take a couple thousand in the morning, a couple thousand in the evening. Now, another study found that when they looked at all the different articles on ginseng and diabetes, they found there was a very strong correlation that when you take ginseng, you actually improve post-meal insulin levels and insulin resistance, as well as a reduction in triglycerides and the total bad LDL cholesterol. So that's all good, and that was published in the peer-reviewed journal Medicine. And men who are finding that they are suffering from erectile dysfunction, there is an article in the British Journal of Medicine on international study on testosterone therapy improving sexual dysfunction. Now, there's natural ways to help with testosterone. And one of the things I suggest is you get rid of meat, get rid of dairy, and increase the amount of soy isoflavon and goat horny weed, which is a famous Italian natural aphrodisiac, and it works, and also the green juices. Then also take L-arginine at about 1,000 to 1,500 milligrams, acetyl-L-choline at about 1,000 milligrams, both of those, along with a glass of beet juice, about an 8-ounce glass of beet juice, about an hour before you want to get an erection, and that creates nitric oxide. So that is a great natural way of having an ability to have erection, as well as chrysin, which is a nutrient that also improves that as well. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a brief break and come right back. Please stay with us.
My heart desires just to appreciate. appreciate the little things I do.
Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Let's take a moment. In fact, we're going to take 10 minutes because this is an important history lesson. Why? Because America has been engaged in empire building for almost 150 years. But in the last 8 years, we've been really accelerating it. The Trans-Pacific Partnership would help that. The TTIP would help it. NAFTA helped it. The World Trade Organization would help it. The International Monetary Fund has helped it. The World Bank has helped improve our chances of becoming and sustaining being the world's greatest empire. It's not good for the people that we are lording over. It's not good for the average person. It's not good for the Constitution. It's not good for the Bill of Rights. It's not good for your privacy. It's not good for the rule of law. But it sure does make a lot of people rich and powerful. So let's now begin with the 10 most evil empires in history. And at the conclusion of this, I will show why America should also be in that 10.
Top 10 most evil empires in history. Number 10. Imperial Japan, 1868 to 1945. The Japanese military regime murdered around 8 million people on its mission to become the supreme Asian state. In December 1937, the Japanese Imperial Army marched into China's then capital, Nanking, and slaughtered 300,000 out of 600,000 civilians. An estimated 80,000 women as old as 70 and as young as 8 were dragged off and sexually assaulted by groups of Japanese soldiers. They were then stabbed to death with bayonets, so they couldn't testify about the attacks. Generals encouraged young Japanese soldiers to inflict as much pain as possible on their captives. Victims were soaked in gasoline and then burned alive. Japan's secret biochemical warfare research center, Unit 731, killed 3,000 people with lethal human experimentation. Prisoners were subjected to vivisection without anesthetic, essentially being dissected while they were still alive. Other experiments saw people locked in pressure chambers until their eyes popped out, and others having their limbs frozen and then thawed out in red hot water. Number 9. The Spanish Empire, 1492 to 1892. Up to 5 million people died as a result of Spain's expansion into South America during the 15th and 16th centuries. Many of these deaths can be attributed to the conquest of the city of Tenochtitlan in 1521, when an estimated 200,000 Aztecs were massacred by the invaders. A further 3 million died as a result of a smallpox epidemic, after the disease was brought to the region by the Spanish. The Spanish Inquisition was also introduced throughout the empire to ensure that the population adhered to their interpretation of the Catholic faith. An estimated 150,000 people were interrogated and tortured. One of their favored methods involved the head crusher, a metal cap that compressed the head using a screw until the skull shattered. Another was the knee splitter, a vice-like instrument covered in spikes that mutilated the victim's knees and leg bones so that they couldn't walk. Number 8. The Portuguese Empire, 1415 to 1999. Portugal's empire sought to spread Catholicism around the world and profit from the agricultural and gold resources of others. They expanded into South America, Africa, and Asia. More than 5 million people died in the process. Widely considered to have introduced the transatlantic slave trade, Portugal exported more than 4.5 million people out of Africa, almost twice as many as any other colonial power. Most were severely mistreated, and disobedient slaves were lashed, burned with hot wax, or sexually assaulted. Meanwhile, in India, Portugal established the Goa Inquisition, in which Hindus were burned at the stake and boiled alive with molten oil. All this to convert people to Christianity. In the 20th century, Portugal faced international pressure to release its African colonies, but refused to do so, and responded in the 1970s by massacring its enslaved people. Thousands were executed and tortured. Teenage girls were crucified on trees and had their breasts cut off. Men were castrated, and children had their eyes gouged out. Number 7. The Ottoman Empire, 1301 to 1922. Stretching over three continents and lasting over six centuries, the Ottoman Empire was one of the most powerful empires in history at its height. But towards the end of its existence, it committed several notable atrocities. In 1876, 8,000 Ottoman soldiers massacred the defenseless population of Batak in Bulgaria, beheading and burning alive at least 5,000 people. Between 1915 and 1918, the Ottoman government slaughtered 1.5 million of the 2 million Armenians living in Turkey. This was an attempt to systematically exterminate non-Muslims from their homeland. During the genocide, children and the elderly were sent on death marches through the Syrian desert. This covered hundreds of miles, and those marching were often naked, so they would perish from dehydration and the heat of the sun. To this day, the Turkish government denies the Armenian genocide, in which ruthless armies called butcher battalions allegedly drowned people, burned victims alive, and threw them off cliffs. Number 6. The French Empire, 1534 to 1980. The French Empire caused the deaths of up to 10 million people throughout Africa, Europe, the Americas, and Asia. One of the worst incidents occurred under the rule of Napoleon on the French colony of Haiti. Starving slaves were forced to collect sugar from the island, while wearing tin muzzles to stop them from eating the sugarcane for themselves. Those who disobeyed the French colonists were slowly roasted over fires as punishment, or filled with gunpowder and then blown to pieces. Another 100,000 slaves were massacred in the holds of ships with sulfur dioxide that was extracted from Haiti's volcanoes. Others were ripped apart by dogs in amphitheaters to terrify the slaves in revolt. Number 5. The Mongols, 1206 to 1368. The Mongols slaughtered 11% of the world's population, around 40 million people, to build an empire that covered nearly a quarter of the Earth's surface. Among the dead were innocent civilians, including pregnant women. Citadels like Samarkand were laid waste in just 5 days, and when the Mongol army plundered the Khwarezmid Empire in Persia, they punished rebels by pouring molten silver into their eyes for challenging the invasion. They may even have created bio-warfare, as historians have traced the deadly Black Death pandemic of the Middle Ages to the Siege of Kaffa. The Mongols weaponized the newly found bubonic plague by catapulting diseased corpses over city walls, infecting entire populations. Number 4. Nazi Germany, 1933 to 1945. The National Socialist Party transformed Germany and much of Europe into a fascist totalitarian state, responsible for World War II and the extermination of 6 million Jews. To incarcerate their racial opponents, the Nazis created 20,000 concentration camps. By 1941, up to 6,000 prisoners a day were sent to gas chambers in Auschwitz, which were disguised as shower rooms. There, a highly toxic insecticide called Cyclone B was unleashed, asphyxiating the prisoners within minutes. Guards would then remove the dead prisoners' hair and gold fillings. The hair was used to make rope, and the gold was deposited in an SS bank account. German physicians also carried out deadly human experiments at the camps. Prisoners were submerged in icy waters for 5 hours until they froze to death, injected with tuberculosis and malaria, sterilized, or underwent nerve and limb transplants without anesthetic. Number 3. The Belgian Empire, 1885 to 1962. King Leopold II of Belgium bought the Congo and enslaved its people, brutally exploiting the country for its rubber and ivory supplies. An estimated 10 million people died in just 50 years. Using a terrifying army called the Force Publique, Leopold made the villagers work to death in order to make a profit. Those who failed to meet their resource collection quotas were shot, kidnapped, or had their limbs cut off. Colonists also systematically sexually assaulted Congolese women. It can even be argued that Belgium's colonial policies contributed to the Rwandan genocide in the 1990s. During their colonial rule there, Belgians classified the native Hutu group as racially inferior to their neighbours, the Tutsi. This caused huge ethnic tensions between the two communities, which tragically boiled over and led to the deaths of 800,000 Tutsi. Number 2. The Soviet Union, 1922 to 1989. Under Stalinist control, the USSR instigated a regime of terror across Russia and Eastern Europe. They intended to eliminate all of the so-called enemies of socialism, and in doing so they killed an estimated 20 million people. Millions of prisoners were sent to Russia's overcrowded gulags, where they were subjected to forced labor, starvation, and execution. Rat torture was one of the techniques used to gain confessions of betrayal. Guards stripped victims naked and attached a rat cage to their abdomen. The bars were then heated, and the rat would try and escape the heat by burrowing deep into the victim's abdomen. The government also took control of farmland across the Soviet states. And when farmers refused to hand over their land, Stalin caused a man-made famine to starve the peasants into submission. Borders were closed and grain was seized. This severely restricted access to food and ultimately caused the deaths of 7 million people. Number 1. The British Empire, 1783-1997. The British Empire caused as many as 150 million deaths across Asia, Africa, and Europe. British imperialists hoarded rice and grain from India. They also dramatically increased harvest taxations, which caused widespread famines that killed a cumulative 29 million people. Without any support from the Empire, Indian civilians were forced to eat grass and human flesh to survive. Britain also resorted to the use of concentration camps to defeat South Africa's Boer population at the turn of the 20th century. 10% of the entire Boer population died in these camps, including 22,000 children, who were starved and beaten to death. One of their most ruthless conquests, however, came in the 1800s, when British colonists annihilated Tasmania's indigenous population. They forced Aborigine wives to carry the heads of their dead husbands around their necks.
If you found this video interesting and you enjoyed it...
Okay, now, that does not include China during Mao Zedong, because they were focused on those that were creating empire outside of their immediate country, because Mao caused the death of between 30 to 40 million of his own citizens with his foolish cooperatives. And also, let's add in the United States. There is a study that showed the U.S. military forces were directly responsible for about 10 to 15 million deaths during the Korean and Vietnam Wars, and the two Iraqi wars. The Korean War also included Chinese deaths, while the Vietnam War also included fatalities in Cambodia and Laos. The American public probably is not aware of these numbers and knows even less about the proxy wars for which the United States is also responsible. In the latter wars, there have been between 9 and 14 million deaths in Afghanistan, Angola, Democratic Republic of the Congo, there's about 5 million there, East Timor, Guatemala, Indonesia, Pakistan, and Sudan. The overall conclusion reached is that the United States most likely has been responsible since World War II for the deaths of between 20 to 30 million people in wars and conflicts scattered over the world. And some authorities estimate that there are about 10 wounded for each person who dies in war. So imagine how many there were. I'll give you just some of the background on one of these. This is from TruePublica, Graham Van Buren. Quote, the Washington, D.C.-based Physicians for Social Responsibility released a landmark study over the death toll for the war on terror since 9/11 attacks, and it was largely ignored by the world's press. It's a 97-page report accompanied by hundreds of studies, reports, and investigations by the Nobel Peace Prize-winning doctors group, and it's the first to tally up the total number of civilian casualties from U.S.-UK-led interventions in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Pakistan. And a poll carried out by the Associated Press 2 years ago found that the average American believed there's only about 9,900 Iraqis who were killed. Not true. We dropped 27,000 bombs on Iraq in just the first year. And also, we don't look at anyone who is buried in the field. Do you remember for years they would have 200, 400, 50, 500 dead overnight? Generally in fields, hands bound behind their back, frequently beheaded in Iraq. None of those are counted. They only counted the ones that died in hospitals. The trouble is, in the Muslim community, you bury someone within 24 hours, and these people didn't want to take the bodies to a hospital, so they'd bury them at home or wherever they could. None of those were counted. And numerous journalists in Iraq have reported on this, but no one paid attention. And then you look at a speech given in 2009 by the Iraqi ambassador to the United States, and he said that there's up to that point over 5,500,000 newly widowed persons in Iraq, and then but nobody paid attention, and then they looked at the additions of people missing and presumed dead. That's over 1 million people missing, but they're not included. So the total amount dead, 1 million in Iraq, 220,000 Afghanistan, 800,000 Pakistan, that's 1.3 million. That's a conservative figure, very conservative. Put this in perspective. If you add in the ones who are missing and presumed dead, which they probably are, that brings it up to almost 10% of the total population of Iraq. By contrast, in World War II, Germany lost 10% of its population in all of World War II. So we're talking about an awful lot of people who have been killed or injured because of our going into their countries. And so therefore, the United States would be about number three on all-time number of deaths because of our imperial overreach. Also, involving the man who heads Turkey, it's unfortunate the coup did not succeed, because as of today, he has already arrested over 7,000 members of the military, Supreme Court justices, over 3,000 judges, prosecutors, virtually all the journalists who had ever written anything about him. So he is purging everyone who's ever been critical. So why should we be concerned? Because he has been supported. The people out in the street supporting him are the radical Islamists. These are the people that support ISIS. They support Sharia. These are people that you should know. Now, why should that concern us? What someone does in their own country? Well, it's not what he does in his country by himself. He's a member of NATO, an evil organization that has completely surrounded Russia and trying to provoke another Cold War with Russia, which Russia doesn't want, we don't need. But the people who are the neocons do, the manufacturers who live on enormous contracts by us making weapons that we don't need, shouldn't have, hundreds of billions of dollars they make. But here's a man that we know the following about. ISIS and the other al-Nusra and ISIL and other terrorist groups have been trained and armed in Turkey. And there's been no demolition of bases or roadways or bridges going from Turkey into Syria. We know that his son, Erdogan's son, was one of the people behind the Justice and Development Party, has been since 2003. And the Turkish military, which has had five other military coups, 1960, 1971, 1980, 1993, and 1997, they're actually on there to support the secular values against the Islamic sectarianism. And when in 2013, when Erdogan visited the United States, Obama praised him as one of his closest friends. Nice calling that, Obama. And why don't we look at the fact that Turkey is made up between 15 to 25% of Kurdish, and the Kurds have been asking for their independence, which they deserve. And there's Kurds not only in Turkey, but also in Syria and Iraq. And yet they have gone against these Kurds. They have not given them any independence. They have killed them. They've engaged in genocide. Why not a word about that? And yet the European Union and the corrupt little stupid countries like Germany and the others run by fascists, and especially France. I'll deal with France and its genocide on an upcoming program. And we already know about Germany. It's beating a dead horse there. But they have not said a word about the genocide that's been perpetrated and the terrorism perpetrated by Saudi Arabia and Turkey, which work together. So here you've got the largest single place on the planet harboring terrorists. They even have special hospitals there run by his daughter that treat the terrorists who have been injured. They give them weapons, and they give them funding. They give them safe sanctuary, and they give them access immediately. Also, where did all those 13,000 tanker trucks come from? Turkey. The Turkish government and the president and his son, who make money from this, his name is Gulen. Not Gulen. his son went into Iraq and into Syria, stole oil, brought it back into Syria, and then sold it to Israel and other countries on the black market, making millions of dollars a day. So why in our war against terrorists, why in our war against ISIS, why in our war against Al-Qaeda, why didn't we once in 14 months, not once, bomb one single one of those trucks? Do you think it's difficult to find 13,000 tanker trucks in a line? Don't think so. We knew it. Our National Security Agency knew it. Our satellites were showing it. But we have a military base. Therefore, we have to allow it. Same way with the support of terrorism in Saudi Arabia. So when Russia comes in, Russia just starts blowing these trucks up, as they should have. And then they produce more trucks, and then they blow those up. We didn't. And our government and our president should be held accountable. And if we ever have a day where there's a reckoning with a tribunal, these people should be held accountable for crimes against humanity. So what you have is you have a paranoid tyrant running a country, and he is charged over 1,000 people with crimes for insulting him. He's arrested hundreds of academics and professors who question his anti-terror policies, which were all pro-terror outcome. He's closed all opposition newspaper. There's no freedom of speech, no freedom of assembly, no freedoms at all in Turkey. He uses force against demonstrators. Where were the American media in 2013 at Gezi Park, where 11 people were shot, 8,000 injured, and 3,000 arrests by the same man? And yet, we don't see any of that in our American media, and we won't see it. And in February, Erdogan's son, Bilal, was investigated by the Italians for money laundering. And ISIS is cooperating with the son to smuggle ISIS oil to seaports. And his daughter's running a covert military hospital. And Erdogan's intelligence are training Islamic terrorists inside Turkey's borders with direct violation of the UN Capital Security Council. So that's what's happening. That's the story you're not being told. And I wish we just had someone capable of telling us the truth from the New York Times. Isn't there one reporter there on issues that matter to go up against this administration and the corporate Democrats and show how complicit they are in all this? That's what I wish, but it's not going to happen. Some good news for those of you who want to do something about the environment. Zero waste. I'll just report shortly on this. It's from Bill Sheehan of Grassroots Recycling Network. Quote, high levels of energy and materials consumption in industrial countries are the driving force behind decline in virtually all major life support systems on the planet Earth. Over the last decade, an increasing number of scientists and other thoughtful people have come to conclude that modern levels of materials and energy consumption are having a destabilizing influence on the world's atmosphere. Energy consumption contributes directly to climate change by adding carbon-based molecules to the atmosphere in excess of natural occurring amounts. Carbon molecules, primarily carbon dioxide, from burning petroleum products, trap radiant heat and keep it from escaping from the Earth's atmosphere. The resulting warming of the air is changing our global climate. Material consumption contributes indirectly to climate change because it requires energy to mine, extract, harvest, process, and transport raw materials, and more energy to manufacture, transport, and use, and dispose of products. The United States consumes 30% of the materials produced in the entire planet, and yet we have less than 5% of the world's population. So a growing international zero-waste movement is calling for radical resource efficiency in eliminating rather than managing waste, strategies that have made major benefits for slowing climate change. There are zero-emission cars, zero-accidental workshops. Zero-waste is a goal for how we should responsibly manage materials and energy required to make them. Zero-waste is a whole system, and I certainly support that. So, recycling, yes. But simply stop buying so many things that you think you need. If you don't need it, if you're not going to consume it, don't buy it. If it can't be biodegraded, don't buy it. We should be designing homes differently. with complete energy efficiency to make them able to run without the grid as our system. We should be growing more food ourselves in our own greenhouses using passive solar, which we can do. I'm going to show people how to do it in about 3 weeks. So that's the key. You don't need all the dresses, shirts, ties, suits. You just don't need them. So stop buying it. Start downsizing. Be a more austere person. Select what you need, really need, and don't buy anything that you want. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Everybody claims that they want the best things out of life. But not everyone, maybe one, wanna go for the tallest rise. Like this particular fella walks around all day long singing, shine.
I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. In just a few moments, we're going to hear about mercury in vaccines from a doctor, or the head of the FDA, being questioned by a legislator on mercury. It's a short clip, but boy, does it nail it. So the next time anyone from any government agency says that there is no proof that there's danger from mercury in vaccines, like the flu vaccine, they are wrong, and you'll hear that. Just want to mention, if you're watching, I'm holding up a jar of my brand new product, just came out, and this is called Graviola, G-R-A-V-I-O-L-A, Graviola, and it's really concentrated, it's certified organic, it is also called soursop, or guanabana, or vanilla custard in different cultures, but it's great for you. Now, and it's low calorie, and it only has 1 gram of natural sugar in it. And it's gluten-free, it's non-GMO, and anyone in South America, Central America, the Caribbean, then you know about soursop. You know about why people use it. I believe that it is the single best thing you could take into your body for three specific causes. I can't tell you what those would be because it's making a claim. It doesn't prevent you from going up and Googling, and you can Google either soursop, sour, S-O-U-R, S-O-P, or A-N-N-O-N-A, A-N-N-O-N-A, M-U-R-I-C-A-T-E, or Graviola, G-R-A-V-I-O-L-A. This is the fruit, this is the leaf, this is the whole plant. There's nothing like it. It took me a year to source this, because it's not something that you just go and there's groves of and growing. You know, you have no idea how long it took to get this. And it's fair trade. It's even a recyclable bottle. It's kosher in two different ways. And it's BPA free. This container doesn't have any BPA in it. So there's nothing like it. If I could just be this emphatic, I believe that when you take one capful of this into your body, you're doing more for your body than anything else I know you could put in your body. So for those of you who know why all over the South and Central American Caribbean you use it, you know this already. Many people in this audience wouldn't know that. Graviola juice, it's brand new. It took me a long time to get it because there's so few sources for it. And that's why you don't see it. And they don't know the science behind it, but I do. And it's a very low price. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065 to get your bottle. It'll be sent right out, at least as many as I have. And then how long it's going to take me to get another shipment, I have no idea. But at least you'll have some. Now, coming up in just about 3 weeks is going to be the only health retreat I'm going to do for the next 12 months. So we are almost completely full. I want a smaller number of people because I'm going to be doing cooking all day. I'm filming I'm not going to go into my new television show, which will premiere in the fall, but I'm going to do like 9 shows that week there. And so those who want can look and sit in on them as we're filming them. It's going to be a lot of fun. How to make junk food into healthy food, the art of vegan gourmet food preparation, plating a dish so it looks like a piece of artwork that I do. So all these wonderful things, I'm going to be doing that. So that's just an extra little thing that's happening that week. But it's just being able to sit in an aromatic garden and smell all these wonderful aromas, pheromones coming in from nature. That's going to be happening. Being able to go out on a road, an old country road, and you look to the left and you look to the right and you see rolling pastures with beautiful animals grazing. It reminds you of the French countryside. The weather's great, lake with swans, yoga, meditation, personal counseling from Luann Panessi, and classes all day long, as many or few as you want to take. Detoxify, cleanse, rejuvenate. This is your one opportunity. And it's you have to just go through an interview, see if it's right for you. If you want to come, call 631-504-6198. 631-504-6198. Now, let's hear from a legislator, Representative Burton, questioning the head of the FDA about the safety of mercury.
I can't believe they said that.
See, we're talking about why they're putting mercury in vaccinations and why it's never been tested since 1929 when Lilly developed it. Mr. Egan, has thimerosal ever been tested by our health agency?
It's been only in that there were those early tests that you know of that were done by Lilly.
And when was that test done? That was done in 1929.
Yes.
Let's follow up on that. In 1929, they tested this on 27 people that were dying of meningitis. All of those people died of meningitis, and so they said there was no correlation between their death and the mercury in the vaccines. That is the only test that's ever been done on thimerosal that I know of. Can you think of any other?
No, in people, no.
Okay.
Except for accidental exposures.
Okay, so we have mercury that's being put into people's bodies in the form of this preservative and has been since the 30s, and it's never been tested by our health agencies. And yet you folks come here and you testify that there's no conclusive evidence, and the IOM says they favor, get this, they don't say they're sure, they say they favor rejection of a causal relationship between mercury and autism and other neurological disorders. Mr. Egan, can you say to me right now that that amount of mercury being injected into a baby will not hurt it?
It's impossible to make those categorical statements of 100%.
That's right. That's what I want you to say.
Scientific endeavor.
So it is possible that the amount of mercury that's being injected, even in trace amounts, could damage a child neurologically, right?
I don't think it has that capacity.
No. That's not what he asked. That's the head of the FDA. So just so you hear clearly, there's absolutely no testing that's been done on the neurological impact of the mercury in vaccines, and yet they're willing to put your child at risk. That is extraordinary arrogance. You should never allow that. You don't want to be, or your child be, a statistic. We're going to close out today with a mother who learned too late about the dangers of vaccines.
Beautiful son, Dominic, who will be 16 years old, has been given a diagnosis of autism that comes along with a 50% chance of survival till the age of 22. He suffers from grand mal seizures, from OCD, from a lack of ability to talk, and this all came from vaccine injury. My beautiful, healthy, developing baby boy who played with his sister and used to call me mom and his dad papa and his sister Dada, and eat healthy food and use utensils and run around like a normal little child, received 6 vaccines just shy of his 2-year-old birthday. And I watched him develop 105 fever, seizures and dissipated into a life of what we're calling autism. From not being able to talk anymore to never hearing him say mom again or be able to eat the way he's supposed to or play with his sisters or his brother, being condemned to a life of discrimination, wrongful denials, people staring at him because he's stuck in a wheelchair, thousands of seizures, jumping in pools to get him out of the bottom, countless IEPs of people telling me that he can't when I know he can, and that that precious little boy still has a beautiful mind and a wonderful soul that just on the outside is damaged from what the vaccines have done to him. And CDC knows. Center for Disease, they know. His medical diagnosis is viral encephalopathy. His brain scans show viral encephalopathy. His blood work shows NK cells and immunological markers of a cancer patient. That is what the vaccines did to him. And yet, the industry and our country wants to call it autism when it's vaccine injury. And the world needs to know. I've been trying to tell the world since I was 23 years old when it first happened. We entered the National Vaccine Injury Fund, and we were told because it was autism, he wouldn't qualify. And we're still in the National Vaccine Injury Fund to this day fighting to get the real diagnosis of viral encephalitis, because that's what the vaccine did to my son's brain.
16 years having to live every day to keep your son occupied and alive and try to help them. I've extended an email yesterday to this woman, letting her know that there are therapies that we have, and we have reversed autism. Full autism reversed to totally normal. And I'm passing it on to see if she's interested in that. But remember, we are sacrificing hundreds of thousands of children's health each year because of the wanton greed of pharmaceutical companies and the complicity of legislators who took money from these companies to mandate them or to say that they're safe and there's no association with autism. There is. This week, I'll be doing a special in-depth investigative report on the efficacy of vaccines. It will be posted, but I'll broadcast it, and it will be the definitive report on challenging those who believe that vaccines actually work. So you won't want to miss that. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.